You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 258. I always have to look up what number it is before we start recording, just to make sure I'm going to get it right. And we have got, listeners, for you an episode that I have to admit, we've been hoping we could bring you for a little while, because we hope, with everything crossed, fingers, toes, everything, that competition might be on its way back in the next sort of few weeks as we head into June. We're hoping that things are going to start moving again. So to discuss it and to get a bit more information and to talk about how things are going to be playing out, because obviously there is still a global pandemic on the go, we have Rob Burke and Max Corcoran. Rob, I'm going to start with you because it's been a few weeks since we spoke. How is life with you?
I think, like everyone else around the world, we're hanging in there. You know, I think we're excited about the start of events getting up and running, but with the kids and my wife here at home, we're just trying to keep each other from going insane or getting on each other's nerves. And that's about the center of life. But I will say, we have been able to get out to the barn more with my daughter now that some of the restrictions are lifted, and she's been a lot happier.
I bet that means you're a lot happier too, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It does. I saw a brilliant quote today, something about it being a corona coaster, like a roller coaster. One day you're up and you know, everything seems to be okay, and then the next day you have a real dip, and it very much is like that. And I think the unknown has been the biggest thing. Max is with us as well. Max, you are multitasking as always. Honestly, you are amazing. But we're looking forward to talking about hopefully getting back out there.
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody is ready to get going. And I know our Board of Governors, we were all very conservative in the beginning. They go, oh, yes, we have to stop. Now we're all going, okay, so when can we get going again?
I know.
You know, I think everybody is itching to get going. I think everyone's ready. But, you know, and also, too, if this had happened in, you know, November, everybody would be like, well, all right, okay, because, you know, that's sort of the end of the season. But now is the time of year when all of our entire country is out competing.
Yeah.
So for it makes it things just a little bit more.
I know. And things had got started as well. Like, there'd been a few events, people were getting going, everybody was that sort of pre-season anticipation, and then it all came to a deadly stop.
Exactly.
But we are, fingers crossed, and I'm very much on the conservative side because I don't want to jinx anything, that heading in the right direction. Rob, competition should be getting back up and running from June. Give us an update from the USCA perspective as to how the land lies at the moment.
Yep. So we have a board meeting next week, and our Board of Governors, including Max there, who leads it, will make their final determination on what to happen beyond the May 31st suspension date. But we had a call last week. I guess I have so many calls these days. I don't even know when it was, but where we had verbal confirmation from the CEO of the U.S. Equestrian that their plan is to have events up and running on the 1st of June. So we're cautiously, super, incredibly optimistic.
I'm very excited. I mean, by the time this podcast goes out, 1st of June, that's like a week away. I mean, that's close. Okay, so obviously the calendar has been massively disrupted. I've seen that there has been an update that's released. I think there's 28, 29 competitions that have all been rescheduled already. I think over 80 have been lost throughout the country. I mean, that's a mammoth task in itself. So how has that process kind of come together and sort of reorganizing that and kind of making a new plan?
Yeah, Jonathan Elliott from Washington, who we had on the previous podcast, you know, he's really been incredible.
Hero status.
Effort. Yeah.
Definitely
serious hero status. We took what is normally, I don't know, Max, like 6 month process to get a calendar established. And we essentially turned it around in less than 2 weeks, but I think it was 16 days. thanks in large part to Jonathan and cooperating with the USCF and the area leadership, and everybody kind of teamed up to try to get, again, get those 80 competitions, any of them that could and wanted to be rescheduled. So yeah, mammoth, crazy. We were on countless phone calls and discussions, but it seemed to, in the end, go pretty seamless. I don't know. You think so, Max?
I think the whole crew with the USCF, Caitlin Sacco, and that group and the calendar committee and then, you know, what happened was that everybody that was either postponed or had to cancel that wanted to reschedule, put a request in to Caitlin Sacco, which then sent it out to the areas. And then from the areas, they all decided whether yes or no it could happen and then came back to us. And it all happened within 10 days. And it was pretty amazing that everybody got it all done as quickly and as seamlessly as they did. It was, I think everybody was, you know, trying to play on the same page. And it was a lot easier than I was anticipating.
I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? Everybody is very much on the same page, working towards the same aim. Everybody wants to get back out competing, but they want it to be safe to do so, which is ultimately the number one priority. Now, I totally understand that, obviously, there are still going to be restrictions in place in some places, and things aren't totally back to normal. There is this sort of new normal. So, Rob, what sort of precautions are being taken to make sure that eventing can be as safe as possible?
Yeah, so first, everybody is being, all the organizers especially, are being instructed to follow their state and local guidelines. You know, if the state and local authorities don't allow a competition to happen, it can't happen, regardless of if we say it can or not. Beyond that, they're following the WHO and the, here in the U.S., the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, their guidelines. And then over at the USCF, a lot of eventers were involved, but they put together a great action plan for events and competitions getting up and running to kind of follow step by step. Here are things you can do to limit the spread, but also things that are requirements or suggestions, and kind of allocating responsibilities on who has to do those various duties. And, you know, I mean, using, I think it was the WHO that put out that risk assessment tool. So any number of these things that are out there. And Max, I mean, you went through it firsthand with trying to get Middleburg up and running. And I know for you, using some of the tools that they provided you with letters and white papers were helpful.
Oh, absolutely. The USCF has done an incredible job for us and helped us out a lot. And Bill Maroney, the CEO of the USCF, put together a really good letter sort of trying to help the state and local governments that aren't horse people understand what our sport is, what equestrian sport in general is, help them understand that we a lot of times are deal with different kinds of quarantine type situations with the EHV1 and other sort of precautions that we have to take, that we understand what this all means, and we know how to take the precautions. And that also too with our sport, you know, when you're on horseback, even though you're competing, you can't really physically, unless something really bad happens, you really can't get closer to than 6 feet from rider to rider, which is good. It's the people on the ground, the officials, the volunteers, is the big thing that we have to be super careful about.
How is it working in terms of the precautions for the people on the ground? Because as Max says, you know, if you're on a horse, there is a certain degree of distance anyway. But people on the ground, what are they going to have to do, or what are the guidelines in order to keep them safe as well?
Yeah, they are going to have to wear masks. And I've seen some really creative ideas on what the masks could be, including reused bandanas with multiple layers. And then, you know, various use of logos. You know, I think our staff early on said we should get logo wear masks and distribute them.
It's a branding opportunity right there, Rob.
It is. So, you know, that is going to be a requirement. And, you know, we have received a lot of questions and comments about, well, what about in really hot areas during the summer? And yeah, it is going to be a challenge, but, you know, I keep thinking to myself, if all we have to deal with from a competition standpoint is reducing our direct interaction with, you know, show office, disinfecting porta potties and, you know, walking in one direction down stable aisles and doing a lot of these things, and wearing a mask even though it's hot, I think we can rise to it. We're eventers, you know, we're bigger than this. We can beat it.
And, you know, we don't have to wear it. Like what they're saying too is, you know, if we're walking across country course or if we're in the barn at 6 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody else there, we don't have to have a mask on. If we think we're going to be within 10 feet of people, then we need to put a mask on. It's common sense. A lot of it's just going to be pure common sense. And we're just going to, and there's going to be times when we're not going to want to do it, but to be able to continue doing our sport, this is what we're going to have to do.
Yeah. And we hope that this is going to be temporary, and this will be a case of, in the interim, let's make sure that in order to get everybody up and running safely, these are the steps we have to take. And surely, as you say, it's a small price to pay in order to be able to be back out competing and making sure that everybody is safe while doing so. And then hopefully in the future, things will have changed and that won't be necessary, that it won't be forever.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very valid point of it is something that we have to just accept that actually the benefit of being able to get out competing, and it is for everybody's safety, bear it in mind. Where can people find all that information, Rob? I'm guessing on the website.
They can, yeah. useventing.com under our safety and education. We also have a rotating banner that includes a link to all of our COVID-19 information. And I'll say that a shout out to the USEF as well. They've been doing a great job of keeping their COVID-19 resources updated. So yeah, no, I think deeper to all this, regardless of what restrictions, you know, we or the USEF put in place, the reasoning behind this is first and foremost to protect, you know, our riders, our competitors, and our volunteers and officials. But then even beyond that, even if you think to yourself, oh, well, you know, we're all fine and you're not scared by COVID-19, we also don't want to get these competitions shut down. We don't want departments of health in local jurisdictions to come out and say, this is too high risk, you can't run, because then everybody's lost. You can't compete, the show can't run. So again, small thing, we can do it. And we'll get over it.
Yeah, we absolutely will. But I think it's good to be clear about it. And I know that there was a webinar that you did alongside the USCF that people can watch back online. So if you do have any questions and you want a bit more information, then that might be useful to go back and have a look online as well. Now, we are going to do in the next couple of weeks a special episode kind of focused on giving you a little bit of direction. If things are starting to ramp up, then we're going to talk a little bit more about getting you back competition fit, competition ready. And we've got a very special guest. Sinead Halpin is going to be on the show giving us her advice as well. But Max, sort of if people are thinking about it now, what are the things they should be thinking about at home to start to get things moving? Maybe their horses have had a little bit of a holiday or they've backed off their fitness work. What can they start to be thinking about now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Something that we've, you know, discussed quite a bit is to make sure that we are ready to go as the riders and that the horses are ready to go as well. Because, you know, maybe we've been riding every day, we've been ticking things over, but in our head, we haven't had that competition mode in our head. So, you know, and that's a very different way of thinking before you're going to get back out and running. We need to try to keep everybody as safe as possible. And, making sure you get out, making sure you get your cross country schools and get some lessons in. We lifted the restrictions for educational activities on May 13th, so their clinics can start happening with USEA recognized clinics and schoolings and adult camps and all that kind of stuff. So obviously within the state guidelines and local guidelines. But we wanted to do that because we wanted people to get out and start thinking about competing again, because it's sort of, you know, we've all gotten a bit mushy, haven't we, in a little bit of a way. So we want to make sure we're all up, we're ready to go. Everybody's ready to go. The horses are fit. You know, you've done your, you know, your, everybody's been checked up. You know, you get your, the vet comes out, looks at your horse, you check your truck and trailer, make sure that's rolling. And, you know, just something, the same thing you would sort of do come sort of January, February, start checking the boxes off and just making sure that you and your horse are both ready. Because we're also coming out and starting to compete for us here in the U.S. It's going to be hot, you know, and so we're having a bit of a double whammy. We haven't been out competing, and now we're going to come out competing in the heat. So we got to really, really look after our horses and make sure that they're doing well.
Yeah, take the time to get prepared, because then when you are back out enjoying, back out competing, you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of recommendations to maybe come back out a lower level than what you were competing before. You know, take your time. This is, it's not a rush, as we say. This whole pandemic is a marathon, not a sprint. So we need to, take our time and be careful. It would be silly to get out and just when you're ready to get going, you or your horse get injured, and then you really can't do anything, you know? So, there's no shame in stepping back a level and being able to then move two steps forward.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely agree with all of that. And we'll have, as I say, some top tips coming up on the next episode for you. So look out for that. Now, we are also going to hear from David O'Connor in just a second in terms of the FEI and the international perspective on the calendar. But before we go over to David, Max and Rob, I just want to say a massive thank you and huge credit to the whole team, because I know it has been a sprint in terms of getting everything pulled together, changing plans, making more plans, changing those plans, trying to get us to this point that we are able to say, yeah, do you know what? We're able to go. And it is massively appreciated, I'm sure, by absolutely everybody listening to this. So a massive thank you, huge credit to you all. And we just can't wait to get going.
No, thank you, Nicole. Yeah, we can't wait to get going. Thanks. And thank you to everybody out there, the organizers, the competitors, the first line health, everyone. It's an amazing effort. It's really, despite all of this, I think there are some really bright spots for humanity we can all take away from it. And I think eventers have stepped up no less than anyone else.
Yeah, it's a massive team effort, and it's a team effort that is going to go forward, because there are, as we've talked about on this show, things that are going to be a little bit different for a while, but together we can make it happen. So let's get this thing going, and we will be back eventing, we hope, very, very soon. In fact, by the time the next show comes out, we should be allowed competitions to be up and running once again. Rob, Max, thank you very much. We're going to get an FEI update as well for you listeners, so stay tuned for that. But I'll say goodbye to Max and Rob now. Thank you both, and we will have you back on the show very soon.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for everything.
Now, going to give us an update on how things are shaping up from an international perspective and how things have obviously changed over the last couple of months, Chairman of the FEI Eventing Committee, welcome to the show, David O'Connor.
Thanks for having me.
David, we really appreciate you coming on and giving us your time, because I imagine at the moment you're a very, very busy man, as busy as always. Things have been totally unprecedented, obviously, from an FEI perspective over the last few months. How has everybody been dealing with it?
Well, I mean, I think people are as shocked as anything. It was such a, such a change and such a dramatic change. The international world is shut down. Not because of the FEI's perspective, but because of the governments, whether they're federal governments or state governments here in the United States, it's shut the world down. So there are no international competitions going on, or haven't been. We would see that, most of the large international competitions that are, that have a spectator base to them, they're going to have a very hard time be able to run. I mean, in our world, you see Burley and Buccalo and Blenheim is gone, Kentucky went. But all of these things are basically because they're spectator events, not because the FEI really, you've been in consultation with them of, trying to help them as much as possible. But it's not the FEI's decision about whether the event runs. It's totally whether the event with their own federal governments and provincial governments, the decisions that they make. And so it's quite devastating to the sport, very devastating. And the ramifications of it for the future it's quite strong. There's a lot of things that are going to come out of it, anywhere from the financial health of national federations, the financial health of actual events, competitions, you know, all of these things are in play here, and it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And even riders that make a living out of competing and everything like that, it has such a knock-on effect. But in terms of the situation now, because obviously we are starting to see, I mean, this show is about getting back to business, and it is a different sort of business, as we've said already, as to what we're expecting. But where in terms of FEI position, obviously we just heard there about it being spectator-based. That obviously has a massive impact, but all over the world, everybody is facing different challenges. So from an FEI perspective, is it very much now competitions can go ahead providing they meet sort of local requirements within their area?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way. There are going to be a couple of hoops to jump through. I mean, the World Health Organization has a document out about running sporting events. And it's a risk management tool that you work through a process of these, you know, basically a questionnaire, grade yourself, come out with a high-risk thing, low-risk thing. And every event that the FEI is going to sanction will have to go through that. The timelines, one, the FEI has totally waived all, you know, the organizing fees, et cetera, all of those are all waived. For our sport, for eventing, usually there's a 10-week application process. 10 weeks before you want to run the event. That's now been reduced down to 4, except for championships, which really there are no championships at this point. And so, you know, everybody's been trying to be very, you know, accommodating about what is possible. And so you'll have to, the events will have to go through this World Health Organization guideline and this questionnaire, risk management questionnaire. And then you're also going to have to, after that, it's really up to the local government or your state governments or your federal governments what they're going to allow, just like they would at a national level.
I think that's fair. And I think we're obviously going to see things very differently in very different parts of the world. But in terms of, obviously, you say there's a 4-week application process now for events to be held. So say we've seen some events that were unable to run. Normally, the international calendar, like the national calendars are a real jigsaw puzzle, and they're very, very finely balanced to make sure that everybody has the right competitions at the right time in the right places. It's not just a case of, you know, pick a load of events and put them on. It is more complicated than that. How is it going to work out in terms of events that perhaps have had to cancel or those that are in a position to put on a new event as such at a time that they wouldn't normally be able to, but actually it's something that there is an appetite for now? Is that going to simply be a 4-week application process that they will be able to go through? And if it's deemed appropriate, then they'll be able to run additional events, so to speak.
Yeah, I think what you said is like, does it deem appropriate? I mean, I think you'll take it on a case by case basis. You know, if 4 events in one country within 100 miles of all of each other all want the same weekend, at some point, there's going to be a decision has to be.
At the minute, David, that sounds like the dream. We'd all love to be having that argument.
Exactly.
But yes,
I'm sure that the National Federation will have, you know, since those all have to be approved by the National Federations before they ever get to the FEI, you would hope that any of those type of problems would have been solved by the time they get up there. So I would think that that would happen. You know, but when you really look at it, the big long format events are not going to run. In Europe. And so really what you're talking about is what is defined as minor events, you know, which is that it's the application process is very, you know, there's not, it's way less complicated than what's, you know, how on a calendar running a 5-star or, and so these events at, you know, the 3-star level, the 2-star level, the 1-star level, I mean, the flexibility is going to be huge. I think everybody has in their mind the flexibility is going to be number one. And I think that is going to kind of pervade everybody. So if it works and it's common sense works, it's going to be great. I do believe the short formats are going to be, you know, if people can run them, I think they'll start to run. I know there's places in Europe that is going to start some national events fairly soon, you know. So I can see some, you know, short format events happening in July and August, you know, coming up. If the long formats, the minor long formats, feel like that they can run and they've got the support behind them, I think that they would do it. But their world is going to change a lot because of, you know, the most likely the loss of sponsorships. and also then the loss of spectator, you know, funds to help run it. So, you know, there's financial business decisions that are going to have to really pervade in here too for the individual owner or the individual organizer. So I see short formats really, you know, going and picking up in that, you know, I would say July, August time. You know, I run one here in this state, me and another person. We're co-organizers of Great Meadows. We're planning to, which is international short format 2, 3, 2, 3, and 4-star. And we're fully expecting at this point that we'd be able, that we're running it. We're planning on running it, and we're fully expecting that we're going to be able to run it.
And that's really encouraging, actually, because we, speaking with your organizer's hat on, there are so many people who are so willing, despite the challenges that are facing them, to make sort of extra allowances, to jump through the hoops, so to speak, to in order to be able to run, even if it's, you know, there are some tweaks made that are slightly different to the sport that we're used to, but it is something, and we are able to sort of work in that direction.
I do believe there's going to be, you know, it's going to look a little different, probably. I can see the things, maybe the prize money is not going to be as high, because if you lose sponsors, you're going, you know, the organizer's not going to be able to afford it. You know, there's going to be things like that are going to adjust, but you would hope that the sport is, you know, it wants to run, people want to run, people want to get horses out, and it's up to an organizer to be able to look at how they can do that and make it financially work. So, for everybody, but it's going to look a little different. But our world is going to look a little different. I
mean, yeah.
Part of our whole everyday life, is going to look a little different. And this will follow those, you know, very practical, ones that are based on, you know, being as safe, as possible. And, you know, really thinking along those lines of how to run a really, really good top level of event. Within these new parameters. And I think everybody wants to do that. And if they can do it, they're going to do it. So I see the short format picking up quite quickly.
Quite quickly. Can I just ask you, in terms of that, obviously the minimum eligibility requirements, the MERs that are set out by the FEI, the sport can't change so much that those MERs are not going to be valid. I'm presuming that the event still has to tick all of the FEI boxes in order for those to be appropriate.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. But the thing about it is that from the FEI's point of view, there's no timeline that has to happen with that, right? You don't lose your qualifications. Some national federations make some of those, they have harder and stricter qualifications than the FEI does. The FEIs are minimum requirements. Some national federations are stronger than that. So you're not going to lose your qualifications.
No, but any international events that we see run will be run to international standards.
Yes, you really have to do that. I mean, there's no way from then you go. Those are all set up for risk management issues, you know, for how people get there. And that is one thing that you don't want to compromise on and would not look to compromise on at all.
Absolutely. And it is, again, it comes back to those puzzle pieces are all there for a reason. And it's all part of the bigger picture.
And they've been developed for over, you know, the last 15 years. You know. So it's not the time to change course now.
No, absolutely. Can I just ask about, obviously, you have a sort of traditional eventing seasons and, you know, up until in the States, you know, you run sort of through to November, a little bit of a break before things start getting going in January, February time again. Do you think we might see, I know there's certainly been talk in Europe of having a more sort of winter-based series. Do you think there might be some more flexibility in those months in terms of the calendar as to what we're used to seeing?
Well, I mean, when you talk about flexibility, you're talking about, again, that's not up to the international federation. It's really up to what somebody feels like could run. Do I think there is room? I'm going to take just here in the United States as an experience, as a thing that could a 2-star run in January, February in the South? Absolutely, absolutely. There's no question. I think there's events that could lead up to it. You could have one in February. There's events that lead up to it. It changes your life. But that's already happened in a lot of different ways. You know, in my time, and you really think about England shut down November, December, January, February. They have 4 months with pretty much no eventing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Well, here in the States, we have 1 month without eventing. And that's the month of December. I think everybody, puts their horses on similar schedules of giving them time down, vacations, and da-da-da. But riders are now riding competitions 11 months a year here in the United States. That's quite different from most other countries. But we're, that's a reality of the business now. So do I see a winter season getting stronger, and could be that some of the long formats or the more that end of season type of competition could happen earlier in the winter? Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people now have given their horses a break at a time whereby they'd normally be sort of going at a really competitive time of the season. So they're sort of, they could maybe move things around to the usual. It will be the new normal, so to speak. Just quickly, in terms of obviously massive disappointment, disruption, huge far-reaching consequences with Tokyo being postponed until 2021. Everybody is now turning their sights to 2021, and we're going to get some sort of more specific high performance updates over the next few months and everything like that once the picture is clearer. But in terms of the FEI's position on that, obviously FEI world ranking points have frozen at the moment. Qualifications, David, am I right in saying that anybody who had a qualification from 2019, that will remain, but they need to get an additional MER in 2021 or when things start back up again?
That's correct. Yeah, if you're qualified, you're qualified. But we have looked into and do not want somebody now that is qualified and not doing anything between now and the Olympic Games because they put their horses in bubble wrap.
Yeah.
And so what would the requirement is that you at least one run one short format at the four-star level to if not requalify. It's like a continuing qualification thing.
Okay.
But it's done at the short format. Now, the other thing that it does is it opens up the qualification period longer for somebody that is not qualified. They now have all the way up until June to get qualified.
Okay.
So does open that side of the game up. But somebody that was qualified is qualified. The other side of the equation is that there are going to be no new nations that are going to go. The qualification system that was used to prepare for 2020 is the same process that will be used for 2021. So the countries that were qualified, those are the ones that are going to go. There's not going to be a new country that can get qualified.
No, and I think that would be fair with obviously everybody put everything they had into qualifying, and it is just unprecedented circumstances that have meant that things aren't able to progress as they were previously. When will the FEI world ranking system open back up again? So will it be when every single country is back up and running? Because obviously it could be that the States are ahead of the UK, or Europe are ahead of the UK, or the States have everybody's going to be going at their own pace. So when will it be that sort of starts moving again?
Yes. I mean, it's true that there has been a decision. If somebody wants can run. They're not going to hold that back that the whole world has to open up at once. That doesn't make any sense. So there could be countries that can run, and there could be other countries that, that won't. And that's actually fairly normal if you look at some other force majeure type things. But I think the rankings, and I'm not really quite clear in my head about this, but I'm pretty sure that they start next year. In 2021.
Okay.
I think it was a 6 month thing, and it could be rolling. It could be a little extended if it needed to, but I think it was 6 months. So hopefully by next year, the world rankings will be, back into a system. It's actually not as important, because we don't do entries of shows based on world ranking.
No.
For eventing, but it's a huge deal, obviously, in show jumping. So.
Yeah. Well, Oliver Townend will be holding on to that number one spot for just a little bit longer. He'll be delighted. Well, he won't be. He'll be wanting to get out going, as will everybody else. But David, thank you Because I think the key thing that comes across here is that very much the FEI is on side looking to support everybody in getting back up and running. The support is there for them to do so as long as it is safe for them to do so, which has been the message throughout this whole show. So thank you very much for taking the time. And thank you and everybody that you work with from both an organiser and an FEI perspective, because I absolutely have no doubt that an enormous amount of work has gone in over the last few months in trying to kind of juggle and rejuggle and make sure that everybody has all the information that they need.
It's an interesting thing because you have no start date, right? So that's, you have no definitive start date. So you can't put any prescriptive, you know, absolute rules. This is the way it's going to be. You know, so flexibility is the number one thing that we talk about on all of our calls, you know, and obviously we do a lot of calls, you know, these Zoom calls and calls and Microsoft Team calls. I've
heard
more about my computer here in the last 4 months than I have probably in my whole life. But the so flexibility is from top down. Absolutely, flexibility is just how we have to do it, where everybody's in it for the right reasons and everybody wants to make things go on. As I said, you know, and we want to make the sport survive this side to it so that it can grow again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And the equestrian community is an absolutely remarkable one. Everybody is pulling together, and we will need to do that over the next few years as well, as very much we adapt to the changes that have happened. But David, thank you very much. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show, and we will look forward to hopefully things starting to move again in the next few months. So we're hoping this show goes out, and within a week or so, we're hoping that eventing in the US will be able to get back up and running in a safe environment. So fingers crossed. Listeners, thank you very much for coming and joining us, and we will be back very soon with another episode. But in the meantime, stay safe, look after yourselves, start getting those preparation plans in place. And David, we will have you on the show very soon. But thank you guys very much for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.